Today's episode of Ariel Helwani's MMA show contains explicit language that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Thursday, October 3rd, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. How about this? A special Thursday edition of the program. We missed Monday, of course, because of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, but we had a show yesterday. I told you we're doing this whole new thing here. And how about this? This is so exciting for me. Wow, what an honor it is. I'm going to get right to it. I'm being joined in our studio face-to-face in this broom closet that they have us in here at ESPN. You think it's the big time. I won't show you a picture of it. It's not quite the big time, but this is big time. Chris Jericho is here. The man himself, le champion.
Le champion. Let me ask you this. If the Jewish have their own New Year, why don't Canadians have their own New Year too?
I would say because maybe Judaism is a religion and Canadian
is a way of life.
Yes.
Every day is New Year's when you're
Canadian.
That's
right. A fellow Canadian in person, face to face. What an honor. I've never met you before.
I've never met you either. I was just saying I've heard your name so many times and,
good things.
You know, great, mostly good, but the bad things are probably bad lies.
Yes.
Is what I think.
I agree. Just
filthy lies. But I've heard good reputation, and I know we have a lot of mutual friends. And
that's right.
So you're pretty close to CM Punk.
That's right.
Right?
So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's great. Great to finally get the chance to meet you and talk with you.
And what an
honor. Let me see how good you really are.
Okay. Well, we're about to find out. And what a huge coup this is for us to have you less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
From the debut, the AEW on TNT debut. But before we get to all that, I just have to share this. So I grew up a huge pro wrestling fan, and I'm Canadian.
From Montreal.
Yeah. My claim to fame, by the way, Montreal Screwjob. I was in attendance.
No kidding.
I was there when Brett threw the stuff.
Was Kevin Owens there too, maybe? Or
he's a jabron, in my opinion.
He didn't speak English.
We have a feud. I don't know if you know this, but we'll get to that later.
Okay. So you were there.
I was there. That's my claim to fame. But I just grew up loving pro wrestling, everything about it. And 2001, I'm at Syracuse University. I'm studying to become a broadcaster, broadcast journalism. And I was taking a course called persuasive speech, I think it was called. And for our final project, we had to put on a speech and explain people or try to persuade them to do something.
Mm.
And my topic was why you, the kids in this class who know nothing about pro wrestling, need to watch WWF Vengeance 2001 and why Chris Jericho is going to be the undisputed champion
right
of the world.
On.
The four-way tournament?
Yes, sir, yeah.
That was my speech.
Oh, nice.
I tried to convince these kids who had no idea what I was talking about. I picked that pay-per-view.
Did you get a good grade?
I did get a good
grade.
Nice. And you proved me to be smart because you ended up winning.
See? Because I had heard that there was this kid in Montreal
who
did a speech, and I said, well, I can't let him down. Got to do it for the kids.
That's right. Yeah. I appreciate that. And you were the dark horse, so I was kind of going out on a limb. And then my other Chris Jericho story, as I'm playing Chris Farley meets Paul McCartney.
By that time you're in the Beatles.
Yes.
That was awesome.
I took my future wife to one of your first Fozzy concerts in Montreal back
in
the day. Yes.
It was the one that was like in the wintertime.
It was in the wintertime,
like
2002 or so.
Yeah, before,
I was like, Chris is my guy. I got to support you.
So we played Montreal quite a few times. This is the Corona Theater.
Yes.
This is the place we've played since then. That's much
so
nicer than the place.
So I'm an OG fan.
Thank you very much.
Even though I focus on mixed martial arts these days.
There's a lot of similarities.
Ton of similarities. And we will get to that. But first, let's talk about last night. If you were to grade last night.
Oh man! Well, first of all, like you said, this is an exclusive.
Yes,
because I don't know when this is airing, but when we're talking, this is the first interview I've done since then. I mean, I'm obviously a little bit biased, and I didn't see the whole show, as you can't when you're performing. But what I did see, and for my stuff, selfishly, I give it an A+.
Okay.
Crowd was off the charts, amazing, and that always makes such a difference. You can have a great show or a great performance if the crowd isn't over the top hot, it hurts it. If you have a great crowd and a subpar performance, doesn't matter, because to me all that matters is what the crowd is reacting to. That was off the charts. The look was great. The fact there was 14,129 people, whatever it was. The reaction, the performances, everything that I saw was amazing, but all I can judge is my stuff. Mm. And to get a chance, once again, the reason why I went to AEW in the first place was to get a chance to make a difference. I could go back to the WWE. I'd fit right in like I always have. I'd be slotted where I am, whatever. Sometimes you're in the main event. Sometimes your first match, whatever it is. AEW, the focus is on me to bring people to the show. I feel like I'm a bridge. People see Chris Jericho's on AEW. Who else is on there? We don't know who the Young Bucks are or Kenny Omega. Or we might have seen Cody Rhodes. But that was a long time ago. Jericho is hot. We like him. We know who he is. Let's watch this show. And then they see all these other great performers and they get involved. And that's what I think was the real success of last night, is a lot of people gave AEW a chance, who maybe aren't watching WWE or watching any wrestling anymore. And we know this from the analytics that we've done. So I think we've created our own fan base, and I think there's a lot of buzz about our company, and it's made pro wrestling hot and, dare I say, cool again, just because of our existence. And to kind of prove that and to shut a lot of people up who were didn't really know what AEW was because of all the buzz we created without having really 1 minute of TV time, all that's gone now. So it was a really cool moment. I don't think it could have gone better. You can nitpick it, but from an overall umbrella review, I give it an A+.
Do you know what the ratings were yet?
We don't. We were just talking about that earlier. I'm kind of getting some tendrils of information here and there. And I think that it's going to be probably between 1.5 and 1.7 million. From what I heard, it could be less, could be more.
Is that good? If I would have told you going in that you were going to get that?
I was talking with Nick Jackson yesterday, and we were hoping to, like, can we do a million?
It'd be great. Okay.
A million. I know NXT the first week, if you're going by judging with the alternative company, did 1.2 the first week.
Okay.
So if we're doing 1.5, 1.7, that's more than they did, which tells me there's a bigger fan base for AEW than there is for NXT, which of course there should be because we have actual mainstream names. They don't. It's just the way it is. So I would, and with all the promotion we got being back on TNT, I figured we would do a million. Anything above that I thought would be gravy. To start creeping towards the two, if we do 1.5, 1.7, whatever, that's pretty strong to me, especially when you figure that Raw, the industry leader, is doing what? You probably know better than me, 2.3, 2.4, right?
Yeah.
So you're getting within a million of the biggest wrestling show of all time. That tells me that's a great start and a great watermark of how much of a buzz there is about our company.
Are you annoyed that they went head-to-head with you? They
not
didn't
at
have
all.
To do that. Why'd they have to do
on,
that?
It's Vince McMahon. It's the WWE. It's what they
you expected
do.
This?
I told them from the start. And this is—it's not even begun yet. There's going to be so many other tricks and tricks and traps coming up. It's what he does. He thrives on the competition of it. I don't care. It doesn't matter. I'm not in competition with NXT. If you want to talk competition, I'm in competition with WWE, the premier brand. Mm-hmm. I think it was smart to put NXT up against us because it makes us look like we're vying for position with them. This is not a disrespect, but it's the truth. It's the minor leagues. It is. People want out of there to go to WWE. You can put, like I said, you could put the Super Bowl on, you can put the reunion of the Beatles, you could raise Jesus coming down from the heavens. I don't care. We are worried about our show, worried about our performance, and we're worried about making the best possible program we can make. Whatever is on against us, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Because I was there in WCW when they were more concerned with getting their pyro on 2 minutes before WWE did on a Monday night than their own product. Our pyro, literally, people cheering up and down because their pyro went off 2 minutes before Raw's did. And meanwhile, they're writing the show as it goes. It's don't worry about what the other person is doing, what the other company's doing. We have to worry about ourselves, making sure we have the best stories and the best matches and the best characters and the best show that we can. That's how we're going to rise above and become a true hit and be here for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years.
What was the vibe like backstage, you know, yesterday around this time, in the hours leading up to it, in the minutes leading up to it? What was that like? You're about to launch something, and you've said before, I've heard you say this, like, I've done it all in this business. I've never actually launched something quite like this.
Well,
what was that like?
Yeah, launching something, but not just me. Like, once again, we're launching it. It's a great experience.
Sure.
But I've done it all. I've had matches that were cut down to 20 seconds. I've had matches that were added 15 minutes in the middle of the ring. Live TV is a different animal. It's great to be able to put on a match where you can go 30 minutes, 35 minutes. I did it every night when I was in Japan. The first match I ever had in WCW against Jerry Lynn, they gave me 7 minutes. I'm like, what am I supposed to do in 7 minutes? I don't even get in the ring in 7 minutes. Right. I couldn't wrap my head around it. And there's guys on our roster that are some of the biggest names in the world that have never wrestled on live TV. Kenny Omega never wrestled live TV. I'm not sure the Bucks ever have. They might have a little bit in Impact when the Impact was live, but it's a different animal whatsoever. So we have a whole roster of guys that have never experienced this. And the top have Jericho, Moxley, Cody, Dustin Rhodes, Jake Hager, Dean Malenko, he's not wrestling, but he's producing, knowing what it's like to be in that live TV element. So the only thing I was worried about is, will everybody be able to adapt, to understand, like, when you have 30 seconds to break, you can't just go, well, I got to just get this high spot in. You've got 30 seconds to break. Cut everything and get to the point. Mm. And for the most part, I think pretty much all across the board, everybody did that. So I was pretty proud of our roster when you have a lot of people who are very green to the live television system. They might not be green in the ring, but it really does. You have to reconfigure your thinking just like I had to after being in the business for 6 years and being main event guy around the world, the first match I ever had in WC. But I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I had no idea because I didn't know how to do this. How do you tell a story in 7 minutes? There's an art form to it and you have to learn it. And I think that was my biggest issue with last night, but everybody really did a great job and everyone was very excited and the crowd was so hot. That was the best part. The crowd made that Riho, Nyla Rose match. They'd never heard of any of those two.
Right.
Maybe the, you know, maybe some have, but for the mainstream, nobody had ever heard of them.
Right.
I hadn't.
Right.
They went out there and had people going nuts for the basic story, big versus small. That's the basic story. The little Japanese girl looks like a princess and the big monster that looks like a Amazon warrior. I mean, it's as easy as it gets to understand, and people understood it. And when they were going crazy for that match, like I said, you know, we got something here.
What is Ton Khan like, the son of the Jacksonville Jaguars owner? He's, I guess, Tom. I was thinking of an MMA guy. Tony is a young kid, right? I mean, I feel like
He's a kid. He's in his, I think he's 36 or 37.
Okay, so we're actually the same age.
Yeah.
So what is he like? Because I've heard people call him like a mark. He's just a fan.
Well, that's not fair.
It doesn't seem fair.
A mark is such a derogatory term, especially in 2019. Whenever people come up to me and say, I'm sorry, I'm a mark, or I'm marking out, it's like, don't say that. You're not a mark. You're appreciative of our work. You're a fan. You're excited to meet me, or you're excited to be here. Marcus kind of goes back to the old school carnival where he's a mark and you want to take his money because he's just a stupid mark. Tony is a fan, but Tony's also, I mean, he created basically the whole analytics program in the NFL. He's in charge of it. He is, I would almost go as far as to say he's a savant, not an idiot savant,
yeah,
but he knows everything about wrestling to the point where when did I have my match against Regal at WrestleMania 17 or whatever, or what show did I pee in Regal's tea? I don't know why Regal came to mind. April 5th, 19, you know,
wow,
99, and he really he runs the Fulham Football Club in England. He runs the whole analytics department and pretty much the talent roster of the Jacksonville Jaguars. He runs a agency group with Bernie Cahill, who handled John Mayer, the Dead & Company, Grateful Dead. So he's not just some idiot kid that has his dad's money that decided to put on a wrestling company. He's a very smart, accomplished businessman on his own terms, but he's also the strictest analyst of wrestling that I've ever met.
Wow.
Which is a very big asset because he's not a pushover. This is nothing against Eric Bischoff in the 90s, but you always heard that he was ATM Eric. He hates that nickname, but, you know, he was very easily swayed. Tony's not. He's not the type of guy that you just go, hey, Tony, like, hey, good kid, I'm doing this. I'm like, no, you're not. This is my idea. So, and plus, billionaires don't become billionaires and stay billionaires by throwing away money. There has to be an end game. And Shahid Khan, who's Tony's dad, I don't know if this is Tony's money, Shahid's money, both their money. I have no idea. I just know that they're not in this business to throw millions of dollars away on a whim. There's a calculated business plan to this. And the end game is to make money, as every business owner wants to do. So it's a very interesting. When you first meet Tony, I was like, this guy is, like you said, he is a kid.
Yeah.
He's not. He's also very advanced in his business thinking and in his wrestling acumen.
How much of an influence does TNT have? Because my understanding is they control production, right? So are they, like, do you have these execs that are weighing in, or are they letting you guys do everything?
I don't know. Like, that's not my wheelhouse.
Okay.
I'm not an EVP in there for a reason.
All right.
I don't want to have anything to do with front office stuff. I just worry about my
stuff.
You just
want to be a performer.
Yeah, but also too, I'm not in charge. I'm very involved in what I'm doing on the show, and that's the way I like it. At this point, I don't want to be involved in anyone else's stuff. If you come and ask me, I'll be happy to give you advice. So I don't know what's going on as far as TNT's involvement. I know that we pretty much have freedom. No one's told me anything. Everything that I've done so far on all the shows, a lot of it improv on the spot. There was a ton of it last night, just going with the flow. No one's ever said anything to me.
Is your deal exclusive with them?
Yeah, I mean, I can do New Japan shows if it doesn't conflict with AEW. I did one earlier this year. I had an IWGP championship match against Okada. I might do some more with them. But it's pretty much exclusive everywhere else other than New Japan.
How many years?
3 years.
3 years, okay.
But it started in January, so we're down to 2 years almost.
Right. Do you feel like this has reinvigorated your career? Like if I would have told you, you started really when you were 19, correct?
1990, yeah. Actually, yesterday was my legit 29th anniversary of my very first match in wrestling.
That is wild.
Yeah, crazy. From Pinocchio Moose Hall in Pinocchio, Alberta to starting this whole new company with a sold-out arena in Washington.
So if I would have told you back then you'd still be doing this close to 50, would you have believed me?
No.
Like, was this part of the plan?
1990, I remember I broke in with Lance Storm.
Yeah.
And I remember telling him, I don't think I'll be wrestling past 30. Nah, I don't want to do that. And then you realize that, you know, when you get to close to 30, like I'm just now starting to figure out what the hell is going on.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I had times in 2005, I left for a couple years, very sporadically since 2010, since my band Fozzy took off, Fozzy's the Priority. But what really invigorated me was two things. One was when I came back in 2016 and I met Kevin Owens and I was like, we had great chemistry. This guy's great. We can do something together. And we became the hottest act in WWE, had the greatest angle, so much fun. And then learning from the newer generation of guys like Seth Rollins and Kevin, Sami Zayn, Roman Reigns, all these great guys where I was picking up Cesaro, like learning from them as much. Like a lot of older guys, this is the way I was taught. You don't do three topies in a match. That's stupid. But then it's like, well, why are they doing three topies in a match, for example? Three dives of something. Seth will do one and then another and then another. And then you realize that this is the new generation and it can work. I mean, if you're a hockey player, you're going to try three slap shots in a game. Then that was great. And then I left to start the Fozzy tour and our record Judas took off huge. But then this idea came to work with Kenny Omega in New Japan. And we did the Tokyo Dome. We sold out the Tokyo Dome, did huge business on the New Japan subscription site. And when I got there, I was like, I can do anything I want. Like, there's no restrictions. There's no Vince McMahon filter. Not that that's a bad thing, but when you work in WWE, there's a lot of layers of government that you have to go through to get an idea passed. In New Japan, there was one, me, maybe Kenny, maybe Gato, who's the booker, but do whatever you want. There's a couple things you can't. And when I was finished with that, I enjoyed myself so much, it kind of reignited the fire of the artistic side of wrestling. So I decided to do a couple more matches in Japan, and then I met the guys, the Bucks and Cody and Kenny, and then the Tony Khan thing came up, and I'd heard it a million times before, so-and-so starting a wrestling company. And when it came through, I was like, I really think I want to do this because the artistic freedom that I have away from Vince's system was such a new beginning for me that it made me excited to be in wrestling. And like I said, the creative fulfillment that I got without any sort of hindrance just kind of opened the doors for me all over again. So now being almost 50, I'm never that guy who's like, oh, I'm getting really old. I don't feel that way. And I'll know the day when it's time to retire. And it's not now. A couple of years ago, I kind of thought maybe I'll do a year or two more and that'll be it. Not anymore, because there's a whole new world here and they need experience. And there's only, you can't teach experience, and there's nobody in the business working at the level that I am that's been on top for as long as I have that's at this level that can do this. So I think I'm very valuable just from that standpoint.
When you say Vince's system, what do you mean by that?
I just mean, like, you know, it's not a bad thing. Like I said, I love Vince McMahon.
You have a good relationship with him?
Yes.
No hard feelings?
I gave him the option to not have this happen, and he chose not to. And
how did that conversation go?
I just said, listen, I told him I was going to Japan. I told him I was resigning for some shows in Japan.
You do this face to face?
On the phone.
Okay.
If I was, you know, if I was in Stanford, sure. I'd talk to him on the phone.
Right, right.
You know, the first time with Kenny, he was super excited. When I said I was going to stay a little bit longer, he was a little bit more tentative. And then when this Tony Khan thing came up, I kind of had a little bit of a I told the story on my podcast. This is not a revelation. A little bit of
Talk is Jericho?
Yeah, Talk is Jericho. A little bit of a runaround from the powers that be, no idea why. And I was like, well, if they don't have the time to call me and it's been a week, then maybe I should talk more with Tony Khan, who calls me, you know, every day.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same thing that happened when I left WCW. Eric Bischoff wasn't calling me. Vince McMahon was. And you kind of get the hint. When the girl doesn't call you back and the other pretty girl starts calling you, well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I told Vince, I got this offer. Here's the offer I got. It's a ridiculous offer because they needed a face for the company. They needed somebody to once again, there's not a lot of Chris Jerichos, but to have Chris Jericho in AEW suddenly made it legit.
Sure.
It's not just a bunch of quote unquote indie guys.
Yeah.
And he said, take the deal. All right.
Wow.
A couple of days later, I told him I took the deal. He said, you took the deal. Can you get out of it? I'm like, no, you already told me. I told you I was doing it. And as a result, there's a famous story of my dad used to play in the NHL 1970, 71 when Bobby Hull left the NHL to jump to the WHA, mm-hmm. World Hockey Association. He was the biggest player in the league. He jumped to this new upstart organization that paid him $1 million in 1971. It was ridiculous. The next week, everybody in the NHL got a raise not to jump to the WHA. My wow. dad went from $35,000 to $100,000 overnight to not go to this new upstart league. When Jericho signed with AEW, suddenly everyone in the WWE got major raises to not leave.
Wow.
So if nothing else, basically the Khan family and me gave everybody a nice raise and got the boys paid. So if nothing else, that's cool.
Right.
But there's more to it than just that. We also gave the fans an alternative. And a lot of fans who I think had left that didn't like the WWE system are now watching wrestling again.
When you were a youngster coming up and you were in WCW doing your thing, do you remember how the older guys treated you? And now that you're, you know, the veteran, the elder statesman, do you remember those days when, you know, you were looking up to someone in the locker room and he didn't maybe give you the time of day or was big timing you and now you don't want to do that? Like, are you?
Yeah. I mean, there was, 90s were different. Mm-hmm. You know, the last wrestling war, Nitro and Raw, was real. And even within the system of Nitro, it was real. So there was a lot of guys there that kind of had a shitty attitude, shall we say. And I remember that. And there was a lot more substances back in those days, a little bit more Wild West. So it wasn't as much of a good atmosphere as it is now. And I, you know, I'm a straight shooter, which I think I have a great reputation for. I'm not always going to tell you what you want to hear, but I'll give you my opinion. If you want it, after 29 years of being on the job, I'll be happy to give it to you. I'll always tell you some positives, but I'm going to tell you some negatives as well. Back in those days, you'd either hear all negative or guys that were just whitewashing you. That was great. Really? Everything's great. Oh, it's great. I wouldn't change a thing. So you're either just lying or you didn't watch and you're saying you did. So I never wanted to be like that. And there were guys, certain guys that were always very cool to me. Like for example, like Hulk Hogan, always honest, great to work with, a great guy who would give you feedback. And to this day still does.
Wow.
So I always kind of wanted to be more like him. And, you know, he has a reputation for some of being – but with me, he was always very honest.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear you say that.
No, from the start.
Really?
From the start to this day. And I always remembered that. And so, you know, if people ask me advice, I'll tell them what I really feel. And I think that's another reason why I'm very valuable to AEW because, once again, if the top guys are Cody, Kenny, Young Bucks, Hangman Page, they need Chris Jericho. They need – Dustin Rhodes, even John Moxley, Dean Ambrose. I mean, he still needs a little advice too once in a while. He's 34 years old. So there's only a certain handful of guys that have been working as long as I have that are still relevant, still have the respect of the guys in the locker room that aren't office, which puts you in a different world. I can give them the straight story and I do. And every time someone comes to ask me what I thought, if I've watched the match, I'll give them pros and some cons. If I haven't seen it, I'll say, I haven't seen it, but what did you think about it? Tell me what your thoughts are.
Mm.
You know,
I used to watch everything pro wrestling when I was in college, younger than that. And of course, now that I cover MMA, I don't have as much time. I watched last night. I took time out, not even because I knew you were coming in, just because I was curious. It's back on Turner. It just felt kind of cool. But I'm wondering if I'm sure you hear this from some people. Oh, I watched you when you were Y2J. I watched you when I was in college. Did you see this coming, like this renaissance for pro wrestling? Because I didn't – like I see it now and with New Japan doing what it's doing and you guys and WWE with NXT. Like it seems like it's cool to be a wrestling fan again.
It really is. And
how did this happen?
It did start with New Japan. And then once again, I'm not putting too much credit into my own, you know, into my own credit box here. But when I did the Tokyo Dome show, Jericho versus Omega – New Japan World, which is their subscription service, went from 35,000 to 100,000 because people wanted to see that match. If you were like, I mean, I didn't want to use hardcore wrestling fan. If you were a wrestling fan that paid attention to more than just WWE, you wanted to see that match. And same thing with the Tokyo Dome. The ticket sales went from 32 to 55 or something like that. That's called a money match. Mm. And as a result, a lot of people checked out New Japan for the first time to see Jericho versus this guy, Kenny Omega, and then saw the match. Kenny Omega is amazing, but also saw the Young Bucks and Okada and Ibushi and Cody and you know, Juice Robinson and Hangman Page and Naito and all these guys. So New Japan became very hot when they came to the States. It was selling out. Then, so they were familiar with this cast of characters. And then when the Tony Khan thing came up in AEW, they kind of knew those characters from New Japan. So just by proxy, if you want to have a company that can be an alternative to WWE, and I don't say compete because there's no competition. They are WWE. But you need three things. You need, money, which the Khan family has. I think probably three or four times as much as the McMahon family does. Not that they're going to spend $9 billion, but they obviously are very successful at business and have a lot of contacts. B, you need talent. By the luck of the draw, there was, I say you need six or eight legit top guys. You had that. All of them came up for contract at the same time. Kenny, Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson, Cody, Hangman Page, Jericho. Okay? Mm-hmm. Then you need TV. Because of the connections that the Khans have and adding a Chris Jericho, who the TNT execs knew, plus the money, plus the buzz, suddenly we're on TNT. Now you have something. That made us cool, especially since WWE, like, they've been around so long with their business practices. They are kind of like the snooty guy on the block that used to be cool but's really not. That's how some people see it. They see AEW, like, we're the Fonz. We're the coolest kids on the block now. A little bit revolutionary, and people also like to be involved from the start. And last night was the first time in any of our lifetimes, unless you're, I don't know, 70, 60, where you could say, I saw the first episode of a major league company. Because if you're talking WWE, they were the WWWF in the 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm. WCW used to be NWA, which is from the 20s. Maybe if you were the start of ECW, but it started in bingo halls. And,
right.
And this is a legit, our very first show ever. As a legit mainstream company, was at a sold-out 14,000-seat arena. That's never happened before. That means the business is cool. More importantly, AEW is cool. Did I see it coming? No. But I see the pieces that led to this where the momentum was building. And I really do believe it started with New Japan that was taken to the next level by Jericho versus Omega January 4th, 2018.
One thing that a lot of fans talk about, and I certainly relate to this. In fact, I was an intern at HBO Sports in 2003, and I was sitting in a room where they were screening tape, and they were watching old pro wrestling footage. And I said to them, what are you guys watching? Why is HBO watching footage? And they were doing a story on wrestlers who were dying young. I don't know if you ever saw this piece. Armin Katayan goes and interviews Vince McMahon. He hits the papers out of his hands.
Right.
Roddy Piper says, let's be honest, in 5 years, I'm not going to be here. And he ended up being sort of right. I mean, it's kind of a morbid thing. But these days, I feel like it's not – I don't know. I feel like there was a point where everyone – that the wrestlers were unhealthy. And I feel like it's these days, yeah, it's been kept under control. Am I right on this?
It's one of those things like – athletes in the 70s, rock stars in the 70s, wrestlers in the 70s and 80s and 90s. Same thing in rock and roll. You don't see a lot of heroin overdoses in rock and roll.
Yeah.
You notice that?
Yeah.
Remember the 27 Club, Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, Kurt Cobain. You don't get a lot of that. The 90s was the last heroin decade. You see that with Weiland passing away and Andrew Wood and Chris Cornell. Guys in the 30s down aren't like that. And it's like that in wrestling too. And people make jokes that guys just go to their rooms and play video games now. That's really true. I mean, when I first started, it was one foot in the old school, one foot in the new school. Guys were doing rails and drinking. They used to tell you, put your thumb in your beer bottle. I'm putting my thumb in like to the top of the beer bottle. Cause if you don't, you turn away for a second. Someone's going to drop a halcyon in your drink. Yeah. You're going to drink it. You're pass out. They shave your eyebrows or worse.
Right.
That was an everyday occurrence. Every day. It's just how it was. Not a healthy environment. Plus, those guys wrestling used to travel. I'm probably exaggerating a little bit, but they're on the road, let's say, 300 days a year.
Yeah.
And they used to have the Star of David routing, as I used to call it, or still do Detroit. Then we're down to Dallas. Then we're up to Chicago. Then we're over to Seattle. Then we're over to, you know, Atlanta. There was no rhyme or reason to the travel. The travel was hard. The lifestyle was hard. There was a lot of money. It was the drug culture 80s. So there was a lot of guys that kind of did die very young because of that. My generation, a lot of my generation have died because of that. I was never into drugs. I was never really into steroids. I like to drink, but I'm not an alcoholic. You know, I might drink three or four times a week, but if I have to stop for 2 or 3 weeks, I can do that too.
Right.
I was very lucky, never a pill guy. A lot of my contemporaries weren't that lucky. The guys underneath me saw what happened with the guys of my generation, or even worse, the guys of the generation before me, and were like, we don't want that to happen to us. Plus, there was very strict drug tests in WWE, especially after Eddie Guerrero died from an enlarged heart.
Right.
No more steroids, no cocaine, no weed. You take, what was I taking for a while? Like Synthroid for a thyroid thing I have.
Uh-huh.
You had to get it approved. Like everything.
So it's legit?
Legit. Oh, that's legit.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe there might be guys that kind of beat it, but I know for me,
yeah.
Legit. If I want to go get testosterone replacement therapy at, 48 years old, which you kind of have to start thinking about, dude, there's no way. You got to go through the process.
Okay.
So, I think that it's calmed down and guys are much more concentrated on the art form of wrestling. You can see how the wrestling has evolved over the years. As a result, too, because of this windfall of money, guys are making more money than ever, ever. They're making money like they should be getting paid, like legit mainstream NFL players, NHL players, whatever. So I think the business always changes, and now we're at a point now where guys are more healthy. They're more involved in the training and art form, and they're getting paid what they should be getting paid. And especially in our company, we work once a week. The need for these live shows, live events, as WWE calls them, why do you do them? Why even bother? What's the point? You don't make money on them. It's just busy work for the guys. And every wrestler has a bump card. When you punch that bump card and you get to the end of your bump card, you're done. You don't get another, you're done. You're finished. So I think the way that the business is changing to more of a TV business with more money, less stress, and more of an athletic, peaceful mindset, I think the business is the best place it's ever been right now.
I have to ask, because you said something that kind of it piqued my interest, because it's a thing in mixed martial arts as well. You said, I was never really into steroids.
Right.
Were you ever into steroids?
Well, I mean, back in the day, I mean, I think, you're talking about the 90s. I think
everyone was doing it?
Well, not everyone, but every kid.
Yeah.
If you're lifting a little bit of weights, you're going to give it a try, right?
Sure.
To me, I did maybe one or two cycles a year, because I was always in good shape anyways. And I was never going to be a muscle guy. But when you figure in 1990, 91, 92, it was still about the 6'8" giants.
Yeah.
So at 5'11", maybe 5'10.5", I figured I at least had to look the part, right?
Right.
So I still trained hard, and I was pretty, it's just crazy. I was saying to Jerry Lynn last night, can you believe we used to be high flyers? Do one flip. Now it's like, guys learn that with an arm drag.
Right.
But I mean, it wasn't even part of, no one ever told me you have to take steroids. No one ever said it. And I never really did, but I would take a few here and there. But I trained hard, and I was just had good genetics for that. So it wasn't hard for me to not do steroids when you weren't allowed to, because I never really did much of them anyways. Dabbled, I guess is
right.
The word you would say.
Because you were always kind of the smaller guy, the cruiserweight. That's why fans really got behind you, right?
When I came to WCW, when I started, I was a smaller guy. But when I went to Mexico, I was a freaking giant. I went to Japan. I was 220 pounds. Like I said, 5'11". In Mexico, there's not a lot of guys that size. Same thing in Japan too. So, but when I came to WCW, definitely cruiserweight type of a thing, because that was just where they would dump you if they didn't really understand what you were doing.
Right.
Like Benoit was a cruiserweight for a while too. The guy was probably 230 pounds. And then they started realizing that it's not about your weight. It's about how you connect with the fans. And then that whole weight thing just went out the window, as it should have, But when I first came in, I remember seeing 1-2-3 Kid, Sean Waltman, on Raw, probably 1993. And it was like, oh my gosh, he actually won.
Yeah.
You would never see you could tell he's a pretty scrawny guy. He's tall, but he didn't have the typical look, and he won because he was so damn good in the ring. And that's when the whole paradigm shift happened with X-Pac and then Shawn Michaels being a world champ and Bret Hart being a world champ. And then it wasn't about your size. It was about your work rate and your connection with the audience.
When were you the happiest in your career?
Well, probably right now.
Really?
Oh yeah.
More so than anything. Undisputed champ.
I always answer that because.
Always.
Always. Because they say, what's your favorite era of Chris Jericho's now? Because if I'm saying, well, back then I'm not paying attention to it right now.
Okay.
I've had a lot of happy times. When you be a champion wasn't a happy time.
It wasn't.
It was a very stressful time, and I wasn't ready for it.
Hmm.
And it was placed in a position where it was kind of a failing position, not in a bad way, but in it wasn't the focus of the show as an undisputed champion should be.
You think it actually hurt you more than it helped you?
It didn't hurt me, but it didn't help me. It was something that if I hadn't completely reinvented you think of this, I won that championship.
Yeah.
Beat The Rock and Steve Austin the same night. Okay, great. That was 2001.
Yeah.
I didn't win the world championship again until 2008, 2009, I think it was. And think about that. That's like a 7-year
gap. Yeah.
So a lot of people win the world title once and then they never see it again. And that drove me crazy. And I went through a lot of trials and tribulations. So when I finally did win the world title again, which I believe was, I think, the fall of 2008. So let's say 7 years later, it was a long time coming. So, I wasn't as good then as I was in 2008. I wasn't as good in 2008 as I am now. But the 2008-09 suit and tie Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Rey Mysterio feud was a great time period. The Kevin Owens thing was awesome. I loved my New Japan experience in 2018, and I love what I'm doing right now. So there's been a lot of great levels of success.
Do you remember when they told you you were going to win the Undisputed title?
Yeah, like it was yesterday.
What, could you tell us
the
story?
Well, you know when people win the world title, they always have their families in the audience. And celebrations. Well, I didn't have anybody in the audience because I didn't find out for sure until that afternoon, the day of the show. And I found out we were at catering. This is back when Vince used to eat with the guys in catering, and he was standing like where he could totally knew I could hear him. And he was standing with Undertaker, and he said, "Taker, you know how you know that the business is going down the toilet? How? We're putting the title on Jericho." And then he kind of walked away, and I was like, "Oh, so I guess I'm winning." So that's kind of how that came about.
Really?
Yeah.
Does anyone then come up and tell you? Like, no. Wow. That's amazing.
Around just that time, it was funny because everyone was kind of jockeying for position.
Yeah.
I mean, Rock was pretty much on his way out. Steve was still working, but he didn't last much longer because he had injuries and his mind was kind of crazy. And Kurt thought for sure he was going to win. Kurt Angle was the other guy in it. And I was too smart to all of it. I just would stay in the back because things change so much in wrestling.
Right. The politics must be absurd.
Yeah, so much politics. But also Vince changed his mind a lot.
Sure.
You know? And I knew that. I wasn't going to get involved in like politicking to win. I probably didn't. It was for the least politicking I've ever done for anything in my career. I just kind of sat in the back, and when they said you were going to win, it was like, wow, really? And I did. So it was a great time.
Who came up with Y2J?
Me.
You did. That was all you.
Yeah, I was in when I was leaving WCW because I had – when did I leave there? Pretty much I think June I knew I was gone, and August 9th was going to be my debut. And I was in the post office. I used to send out – just when I was in WCW just floundering, I had a post office box, and I would say, if you want a free picture, just send me a self-addressed stamp envelope. So I'd get 100 every week, 200 a week, and I would sign them, and my – girlfriend at the time was my wife now. We would take them to the post office and mail them, just trying to grassroots make fans.
Sure.
And I was in the post office and I saw a countdown to the new millennium. It said countdown to the new millennium. And it was, I think at the time, I don't know, say 6 months, 5 days, 4 hours, 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. And I said, that'd be a great way for someone to come into the WWE. And I'm like, wait, that's a great way for me to come in the WWE.
Yeah.
So that's where I came up with the millennium man, the countdown clock. And everyone was really terrified of Y2K.
Yeah.
At the time, 1999, when at the stroke of midnight, when it went from 99 to 2000, the world was going to end. All electronics was going to crash. Remember, like planes wouldn't even fly, and it was the Y2K problem. And I said, well, K rhymes with J. I'm Jericho. Y2J will be my finish.
Brilliant.
And so I went to Vince to kind of pitch ideas, and my idea for my finish was Y2J. And he's like, no. He goes, he goes, your finish isn't Y2J. You're Y2J. I was like, really? He goes, yeah, you're Y2J. And that was so, it was my idea, but Vince put it on me as a nickname. So it was a real genius move on his part. Plus it's another thing that Vince likes to do. Coming in as Chris Jericho was another guy that had been made in other places. Y2J was his guy.
Right.
He called me Y2J for probably 5 years. Never Jericho, never Chris, Y2J, cause that's his creation. Right. And that's where it all came from.
Have you ever seen an MMA fighter who won a fight using Walls of Jericho?
I did see that. Yeah.
That's absurd, right?
I guess
that must have
really works, brother.
Yeah,
that must have funny. Yeah, whenever you see those type of things, it's funny because now I have my finishes, the Judas effect. One of my finishes is spinning elbow to the face, and a lot of people are like, not a lot of people because it's pretty over now. But people are like, oh, that's a terrible looking finisher, and it's like, geez, how can you do that? I'm like, let me give anybody a spinning elbow to your face and see if you like getting that better than, you know, a Stone Cold Stunner.
Yeah.
You know?
Of course.
So and when you see the Walls of Jericho used in an actual MMA match, that's just good for me because it shows that it actually works.
Validation.
And it really does work. If you crank that thing in, it fucking hurts.
Am I right for thinking that at a time you weren't a big MMA guy? Like you didn't like MMA? I've seen that you've trained with Josh Rafferty, right? Who trains with Jack Swagger, Jake Hager.
Jake Hager, Batista.
Yeah. So have you come around to it?
I never didn't dislike it.
Okay.
I have minimal time, so I just never really followed it. But whenever When Brock had his fights, I watched.
Okay.
When Punk had his fights, I watched. When Batista had his fight, I watched. Guys that I know.
Okay, so you're not a hater per se.
No.
Oh, okay.
What's to hate? I appreciate the size of it. You know, but when I started training it, I really enjoyed it. Just the whole aspect of MMA training really appealed to me. And it was some of the best training. Josh has kind of turned down his training, so we don't train right now. But for a while, it gave me a lot of ideas and really put me through the ringer from a physical standpoint, which I really loved.
Is there a heat between you and Conor McGregor?
I don't think so.
You guys have gone back and forth on Twitter over the years.
That's one of those things. It's like, it makes me laugh whenever you hear that because I'll volley it. I'll take it and volley back. And I'm like, well, he fought Floyd Mayweather. So, let's do a match.
He was talking about the history of the champ status.
Right. And then he was making rules of what it is. And I was just like, basically just shut your mouth. Like, I know he's just a yapper. He just talks or whatever. And he probably loves it.
But
and
as a showman, you can respect him, right? Like what he's done. Yeah.
He's made so much money. And dare I say this, from being a marginal fighter. Like when's the last fight that he won?
2016.
Okay,
November.
How many fights has he had since then?
Not that many. Three. I mean, if you want to count the Floyd one.
I do count it.
Okay, fine. So three.
Okay, and how much money has he made on those three fights that he lost?
A lot.
Like, let's get close to like $500 million, let's say.
Not that much. Maybe 400, like
300?
No, like 150. UFC fighters don't make that much, but the $100 million was for the Floyd fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't make that much. $150 million for three fights that he lost. And the Mayweather one was Floyd just toying with him, basically. And the other two were very quick, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what is that? Maybe 20 minutes work?
A little more, but fair point.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He knew how to talk people into the building, whether he was winning or losing. And Ali was great at that too.
Yeah.
Even when he wasn't winning, he still knew how to talk people in the building. And that's the crux of wrestling. Conor's just learning from wrestling. It doesn't matter if you win or lose. It's if people are paying money to see you fight. That's what a draw is. That's what a top draw is.
Why isn't CM Punk with AEW?
He doesn't want to be.
Did you guys try?
Well, from what I understand, I never had any personal conversations with him.
You don't get involved in that because you're friends with him, right?
Well, not at this point. He's a interesting guy.
Okay,
to be friends with. But I know
so?
I know there was some from what I understand there was some reaching out to him.
Yeah,
and it wasn't via text only, like he said.
He said that to ESPN recently.
That's Punk. He's a martyr, right?
Okay, so, and this upset Tony. Apparently.
I think it probably hurt their feelings more than anything. But I was like, guys, that's Punk. That's how he is.
You think it'll be a big coup?
At this point, I don't know.
You don't know.
I mean, I think it would be to have him, but we don't need him. I mean, it's always great to have a guy like that, but it's up to him. You know, it's the one thing I love about AEW is there's no assholes in the locker room.
Was he an asshole in WWE?
No. At times, but so was I.
Okay.
You know, so was Steve Austin. So was Rock. So was anybody that really made it.
Yeah.
You have to be a little bit of an asshole to make it on top. I haven't talked to them in such a long time.
Okay.
So, if he wanted to come in, it'd be a huge buzz. It'd be great. But I have a feeling, just as I have a feeling with most of these things, that if he does come back, he'll go to WWE. A, because Vince always wants to close the circle.
Mm.
He wants to be friends with everybody and wants to win in the end.
Uh-huh.
And I think Punk probably feels the same way.
Even though they the lawsuit and all this stuff, you think he comes back? I mean, if he made amends with Brett after what happened. Right?
You know, Brett, Goldberg.
Yeah.
You know, Bischoff.
Right.
Bischoff was on a rampage wanting to end WWE. So, this lawsuit between Punk and Vince. Okay. And then they come back and they make some money together and everybody's happy and Vince can think he won and Punk can think he won and everybody's happy, you know. So, once again, I'm just playing armchair quarterback.
Okay.
I don't know. I've had no taught dealings with it.
Okay.
I just know that now there's some rumblings about it. So now with the money that Vince has, he can just throw money at anybody to have him come back and he wins. You know, he wins in the end.
Let's end on this because I think you have to go. Who's the greatest ever in your opinion?
Shawn Michaels.
Really?
Yeah, by far.
By far?
Yeah.
Wow. Why?
For what I like, to me, the top three ever are depending on what you like. This is, once again, my opinion. The three best is either Flair, Bret, or Shawn. And I find that Shawn is the perfect combination of Bret and Flair.
Interesting.
Shawn had the personality, the arrogance. Shawn was a tremendous worker. He was a little bit of an asshole when he had to be. His creativity was off the charts. His high spots were amazing. The way he put together a match, the way he sold matches. His look, for what I liked, you know, long hair and the flame. I mean, look, even to this day, there's so much flamboyance to what I wear. It comes directly from Shawn Michaels in 1988 all the way through. Right. And then also working with him. I only worked with Flair a few times, but he'll even tell you he didn't have a lot of confidence. He was in his 50s. I never got to work with Brett. And I got to work with Shawn when he had his resurgence in one of the greatest angles in WWE history, not just in my career, but in WWE history, is the 2008 Jericho Michaels feud that was supposed to go 1 month that went 9 months and ended with the world title match. So yeah, to me, he's the best of all time, you know, by far.
Congratulations on everything you've done. This is a big honor for me to talk
to you. Thanks, man. Well, yeah, it's great. You're great. We could have talked for another hour here.
Would have loved to see you and Brett in the ring.
Yeah, me too. And
Canadian icons.
And me and Owen as well. I would have loved to have done. And quick thing, I've said this a few times, but I'll say it to you. I think if Owen had not passed away in 96, in about 99, my apologies, in about 2001 or two, he would have had a huge resurgence. Just like I did, just like Shawn did, because look who was coming into the company at the time. Jericho, Edge, Christian, Benoit, Eddie, Dean, Mysterio. He would have had great matches and rediscovered his passion for wrestling too. So I just wanted to say that. I think Owen's also one of the most underrated greats of all time.
I agree. Couldn't agree more. Congratulations on the launch of AEW. Good luck to you guys. I will be watching. I enjoyed last night. I hope you guys end up. Do you have the breaking news? Do you have the ratings, or is it not in yet?
I don't have it in yet. The last I heard was, looking at 1.7, 1.9.
So that's tremendous. All right. Well done. And continued success to all of you. And Talk is Jericho is the podcast. AEW on TNT, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. And then they replay right after.
I heard. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, which is old school WCW style.
That's true, yeah.
And Fozzy is the band. This man does everything. He's a real Renaissance man. Thank you very much for the time, Chris.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. So that was phenomenal stuff. Thank you very much to Chris Jericho. Now for some breaking news. Wanted to leave you with some MMA stuff as well. We're being joined by our old friend, the pride of Liverpool himself, the Liverpudlian, the Scouser, the Cage Warriors legend, Paddy Pimblett, is joining us in the final minutes of this program to break some news for us. First off, it's been a while. Paddy, are you there?
Yeah, how are we? I'm good. A long while.
It has been a while. All right, well, we just found out that you're coming back. The London show in November, but I understand you actually have your opponent now, right?
Yeah, 22nd of November in London, the comeback happening.
Who will you be fighting?
I will be fighting Donovan Desmet.
And this will be at 155, correct?
Yeah, 155. I was scheduled to fight Donovan last year in December, and I said when I had to pull out of it, if he wants to fight when I come back, you can have him, a man of my word, know what I mean? And like, nice enough for me. Everything's like come round in a circle. Everything happens for a reason, because Donovan's now the number one contender. So I come back, take Donovan out, and then I'll be taking that belt.
This is going to be your first MMA fight, your actual first pro MMA fight. I don't count the grappling match with Stevie Ray since September of 2018. So it will be well over a year, 14 months to be exact, a little over 14 months since your last fight. For those that don't know, why have you been out for so long?
Injuries, you know what I mean? It was the 1st of September when I fought, and I'm not going to fight till the 22nd of November. So, yeah, it's about 15 months, innit?
Mm-hmm.
I had surgery 3 months before the last fight, and just made the hand 10 times worse by fighting. Got told not to, but did anyway, and I was going to fight again after that, like I said, against Donovan in December, but God, thought about it, spoke to my coaches and my family and stuff, and everyone said it's a bad idea to do with me and the way it was, and I have to get more surgery in April. So I've had to rehab this. Like last time I fought, 3 months after having surgery, this time I never threw a punch for 3 months. So my hand's a lot better than it was.
Do you feel like there's a lot of pressure on you now? Do you feel like people have forgotten who Paddy Pimblett is? And now you have to almost remind them, you have to go on a run here to remind people that you are worthy of all that hype not that long ago?
Yeah, I thought that a few weeks ago or a few months ago, like, but soon as it got announced there was fighting, all people were queuing up to fight me, you know what I mean? Everyone wants me, lad. So I don't, no one forgot, Abdi. Everyone knows who the fucking boy is.
Do you feel like you need to prove it to yourself that you can get back to where you once were? Do you feel that are you putting that pressure on yourself?
Yeah, of course. In the situation you're in, you've got to put that pressure on yourself. You're not trying hard enough.
Are you doing anything differently to you know, switch things up because it's been a while since you had your last victory? Are you changing anything? Are you changing the way you train, who you're training with? Anything different about this preparation as opposed to the ones in the past?
Well, before my last fight, I never really, obviously with the hand and stuff, all I could do leading up to that fight was striking, and like, I couldn't wrestle other than a little bit of jiu-jitsu off my back. It was mainly striking and cardio. I never done any weight training, and since I've got a new strength and conditioning coach, Red Bull Performance, and he's took my strength game and my conditioning to another level. I've continued doing my striking with my boxing coach Chris, and that's Muay Thai coach in the gym, and assistant coach in the gym Ellis as well. Been doing all my striking and stuff with them, and then my MMA stuff with Ellis and Paul as well. So it's not like I haven't been doing nothing for that time. I've still been training the whole time, getting better every single week, no matter what.
You know, we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but, you know, the critics out there, because, you know, they love to say, oh, you'll never amount, you or never was, things like that. It becomes louder when you go on a streak of not winning. Do you listen to that now? Do you try to block it out? How are you dealing with those critics these days?
You know, them as fuel to the fire, don't you? You do that, think about it, stuff like that, but at the same time, people who say all this are sitting in the Mars box room, typing it on Twitter, on the phone, you know what I mean? So when another fighter's got something to say, yeah, and some random divvy on Twitter who just wants to have a little go for me to say something back, that doesn't bother me at all.
Do you still love it? Do you love the grind? Do you love training? Do you love preparing for a fight?
Yeah, everyone does, but you've got to, when it comes to a fight, you've got to love it that much that you hate it, haven't you? You've got to say, man, that you hate it.
And you reached that point now?
No, at the minute, because I'm not that deep into fight camp yet.
Right. Okay, but that is eventually going to come, and that is a good sign when it does come.
Yeah, that's a good sign when it does come. In the next few weeks, that will come.
All right, so the return is November 22nd, London, Indigo at the O2, Cage Warriors 111, the return, the highly anticipated return of Paddy the Batty Pimblett going up against Donovan Desme, who's on a bit of a run these days. They call him Vegas. He's won his last two fights in a row, looking good as of late, fighting out of Belgium. This is a fight that was supposed to happen last year, and now they're going to make it happen for real later on this year in November in London. Paddy, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you very much. Welcome back, my friend, and it's great to talk to you again.
It's all good. Don't worry about it. Pleasure's always mine, Ariel. You know that.
Much respect, my man. There he is, Paddy Pimblett, joining us on the back end of today's special edition of the Helwani Show podcast. So we did the show yesterday. Some of you were confused about why we have the same name. Listen, it's Monday, Helwani Show, YouTube, Twitter, all that stuff. You know the places. Then on TV on Tuesdays. And now this one is where we let our hair down a little bit, and it's in podcast form. I've never really liked the word podcast, but this is truly a podcast, okay? And it's fun because now we could do things like this. Oh, Chris Jericho's coming to town? We could talk to him. Oh, Paddy the Batty has something to say to you? We can talk to him. It's fun. You're going to hear from a lot of media guys the same stuff, so don't worry. But this is fun. TST, are you having fun yet?
Yeah, sure.
What about Chris Jericho, huh?
He was pretty good.
What a fascinating guy. Talked about steroid use, talked about Vince McMahon, talked about the early days, talked about CM Punk. That was fascinating stuff.
I still think we should have talked about ghosts. I know he's into that stuff.
Yeah, ghosts. You tried to push me to do a little ghost talk, a little UFO talk. That's not the kind of show that I like to run over here. But this is fun. I'm excited about this. Thank you very much to Chris Jericho for coming in. What a great guy. Wow, what a nice guy. Talking to him a little bit off air, was asking me before he left who I think is the best MMA fighter of all time. I told him GSP, who I think is currently the best MMA fighter. I mean, he's just a really nice guy. You know, sometimes you see these guys on TV and they're like, you know, they're performers. I'm not saying that I'm, you know, falling for it. I'm a mark per se, but you never know what you're going to expect. But that is a true mensch right there. So thank you very much to him. Check out AEW on TNT every Wednesday, doing things a little differently here on this podcast. So I appreciate you all for listening, subscribing, downloading, rating, reviewing, leaving questions. We'll continue to answer those questions every Wednesday. We're not doing one of these next Wednesday because I'm off because of Yom Kippur, but I'm back on Monday for a big Helwani Show on the usual YouTube, Twitter, TV platforms. All right, so I'm back on Monday. Of course, this weekend it's UFC 243. I'll be doing a show with Chael on Saturday before the show. A lot more coverage to come, but for now we're out of time. Thanks to Chris. Thanks to Patty. Thanks to TST. Thanks to all of you. I love you. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon.